I wanted to know what makes people tick as a child, because I saw good people behaving badly, and I didn't understand it. So today's talk is about your competing internal impulses, because that's what I want to explore, and primarily to gain greater understanding of the various impulses that influence and maybe even control our lives, our actions, our accomplishments, and our lack of accomplishments. Obviously, our egos, with their four driving needs, influence us and all living things. We have needs that can be expressed differently, too. I use Sefuli plus two as an example, and I'll explain what that means a little while later. We look for comfort versus discomfort. We look for convenience and not inconvenience, and we certainly look for gratification. In my energy model of life, we seek to acquire energy, preserve and to protect the energy that we've acquired, translate it, and then express it, and release what we can't use, and we're looking to get a sense of closure from the cycles that we've engaged in. And I also want to explore the concepts of satisfaction and dissatisfaction to see how we can use these energies to create more effectively in our lives. If you observe your own thinking, feeling, speaking, and acting, you will notice an often dispersed flow or flows of energy. I suppose it's possible to have one single thought, a single emotion, tell yourself a single thing, and then take a single pure action. I don't think I have personally ever done that. More often than not, one considered action results in multiple alternatives jumping up, perhaps including why to do it, why not, why to do it later, if at all, the problems it could cause, what it causes now, and what could be caused if I actually try to remedy it. Who else could do it or should do it? Why not wait to consider it later on and not even consider it now? And certainly the tendency to procrastinate and wait to do it later. Maybe those thought processes could be simplified to moving ahead, reversing course, stopping, going left, and going right with regard to action. I almost described what it could be like in a vehicle. Now, obviously, we don't have to turn 90 degrees to the right or to the left, so we could go in a whole bunch of different directions other than straight forward and back. But you get the idea. Let me talk about comfort and discomfort. If we're comfortable, which of course we desire to be, it's difficult to muster the energy to overcome inertia because there's not a sufficient why. We look for comfort, and if we're comfortable, it's as if we have already arrived at our destination. I'm here. Why do I need to do anything differently? Here's the problem with comfort. It's restful, but it's not growthful. Comfort takes away the motivation to reach for something more. It's felt I'm already at that more. I have that more. We want comfort to be permanent, while in reality, it's better for us if it's temporary. If we see comfort as the oasis in the desert of adventure, movement, and action, we'd have a healthier attitude toward comfort. When there is a power in our own personal message, and it's greater than our investment in our own self-consciousness, we're going to take action to express it. The split in this case could be us, the messenger, and us in the self-protective mode. Whichever part of us is most powerful is going to be the one that is dominating our expression. Here's a description of a typical decision-making process in which I'm going to involve the main influences that give rise to our internal impulses. It starts with a thought. I want to, fill in the blank, or I have to, fill in the blank. This is a beginning demand that we will now have to respond or react to. The ego expects us to win and be the best at this activity, better than others. Emotional pain will result if we fail in that quest. In the process, we must be able to defend the self from criticism, emotional or physical attack. Those are the questions that could be asked. Can I defend myself from criticism, emotional or physical attack? So, in any action that we consider, that process is usually under our level of awareness. But we could look at it and rate it 0 to 10. Can I defend myself from criticism, emotional and physical attack? 0 to 10. And frankly, how important is it to do that? Can I be the best at this? Yes or no? 0 to 10. And frankly, do I have to be the best at this? I know my ego says yes, but is it true? Can I take the best for myself? Yes or no? And rate that 0 to 10. And then the question is, do I actually have to take the best for myself, or can I give the best of myself? Can I keep control of all my possessions and protect them from others who might try to acquire them? Yes or no? 0 to 10. And do I need to protect and control them against other people's trying to acquire them? I could use Sufuli plus 2. Sufuli stands for survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity. And the plus 2 represents the need to be right and the need to look good, get approval. And I know those things are influencing me and they're influencing you as well. So we could ask this. Doing this action enhances or threatens my survival? 0 to 10. Doing this is useful or not useful? Doing this contributes or reduces my freedom? And these could be rated 0 to 10. Doing this makes me feel and express love or not? 0 to 10. Doing this strengthens or weakens my identity? 0 to 10. Doing this makes me right or makes me wrong? And we could calculate that 0 to 10. And doing this action makes me look good and get approval or not? Rated 0 to 10. Another way to do this is I could use the energy model of life. Doing this action acquires energy or it doesn't acquire energy, could cause me to lose it. 0 to 10. Doing this action protects and preserves my energy or doesn't. 0 to 10. Doing this helps me translate energy or not. 0 to 10. And doing this releases unusable energy or not. And doing this action gives me a sense of closure or not. Rated 0 to 10. I could use this spectrum, a horizontal line of satisfaction on the far right and dissatisfaction on the far left. And I could use it to understand what is going on internally. Doing this moves me towards satisfaction or away from satisfaction. 0 to 10. Doing this shows me where I am on the 10 emotional states scale and what I have to deal with in order to move upward. And that scale, starting from the bottom, shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. Clearly, we want to move up to those top three. In some circles, it's thought that you can look at human behavior through two lenses, love and fear. That makes a lot of sense since love and fear are ways to represent bonding and rejection, the two powerful impulses in our electromagnetic universe. I suppose we could say to ourselves and others, I did action B and not action A because I love action B, and the perceived results were more attractive than had I done action A, and what would have likely resulted. I could have also admitted that I feared action A and its likely outcomes, and therefore I rejected it and chose to do action B. It's an interesting thing about lightning rods that despite being struck by the immense electrical power of lightning, they are not damaged. Why is that? It is because lightning rods don't try to contain the lightning. They pass it into the earth. If a lot of your actions and inactions are based on a fear of being struck by criticism, emotional or physical attack, the solution probably isn't avoid all situations that could lead to us being criticized or attacked emotionally or physically. The solution could be to develop a mindset that lets the incoming energy go into the ground. If we didn't try to contain it, process it, take ownership of it, and just let it go into the ground, we'd stand a better chance of living life. If we have a powerful internal impulse based on fear, we would do well to really get to know that fear. Most of us try to block it, avoid it, deny that we're afraid of something, but fear is common to human beings. Our energy exchange experiences teach us to be afraid. Where abuse was present, those fears are likely to be much more influential. And the interpretations and conclusions we made out of those energy exchange experiences expand the range of fearful things to be more and more and more things are scary. We populate our path with imagined monsters and think it has to be that way. The monsters we fear are empowered by our avoidance. Like bullies, monsters are driven by a deep fear. Confronting our fears is what's needed. Culturally, men are told and are expected to be fearless. That's ridiculous. Without fear, we wouldn't survive another week. Fear informs us. It informs us that we need more information and understanding about that subject. Fear isn't calling upon us to bury our heads in the sand, just the opposite. It's calling on us to raise our heads in an attempt to process more information more accurately. I have enjoyed the first two seasons of a series on Netflix or Amazon Prime titled Sense 8. It's about 8 sensitive people who can connect to one another mentally and emotionally, enabling their physicalities to blend. With my recent focus on how traumatic energy exchange experience split our identities, the fictionalized Sense 8 series doesn't seem so far-fetched. It isn't difficult to believe as children that we were both holy, because unlike other kids, we go to church on Sunday, while at the same time knowing our internal thoughts and our outer behaviors, that we are sinful. So there we are with 2 identities in this context, holy and sinful. When you list the roles that a person plays in life, we end up with more identities. I'm a landlord. Sometimes that means I'm a handyman, too. Sometimes I'm an effective handyman, and sometimes I'm not. I'm usually one landlord identity because I can empathize. But I am 2 types of handymen, one effective and one not so effective. We are man or woman, husband or wife, brother or sister, son or daughter, employee or employer, or neither. We are doers or not doers many times a day when attention moves from one possible activity to another. Who or what is making the decisions about what to do and not to do? Your internal impulses. That's who. To simplify once again, your feelings of love or your feelings of fear are making you make your decisions. I recently completed mediation training in order to become a Florida Supreme Court certified county court mediator. I see a direct connection between mediating a dispute between two parties and mediating a split in one person's identity. In both cases, the result has to be win-win. While some impulses are internal to us and others are external, they all generate feelings and impulses that are internal. Poverty could be labeled external, but poverty affects a person's life, how they think, feel, speak, and act. Poverty gets internalized. Pain and illness are internal. They govern much of what can be done and much of what is even considered or not considered. Pain and illness demand attention, perhaps more than any other conditions. If you've seen a play with multiple characters on a stage at the same time, or if you have conducted a roundtable meeting in the business world, you know that people will try to be heard. They have their own opinions and desire to express them, to give them life and to have them cause effects in others. Our ideas, our impulses, our desires want to produce desirable effects. They are alive in the sense that magnetically they will grow by attracting similar energy to themselves. Now back to the roles we play in life. These roles want to acquire energy. They want expression. They want to be causative. They want to create. I've been a fan of the amazing man named Walter Russell for some years now. After reading a biography of him that he cooperated on, I understood some of the principles that enabled him to become accomplished and world famous in 5 or 6 different areas, such as art, that is painting and sculpting, science, business, music, and athletics. His techniques, which he described to the author in answer to, "How do you get so much done each day?" was, "I divide my day into 2-hour blocks of time. I work on only one subject during that 2 hours. At the end of the 2 hours, I move on to another topic for 2 hours. I never get bored, and I never get tired." In response to the question, "You get a lot of good ideas. Why don't you just implement them?" he said, "Why would I do that? I would make a lot of mistakes and missteps, waste time doing things over and over, and waste money and effort. I only take action when I can see in my mind's eye the successfully completed action." In other words, impulses were not the boss of Walter Russell. He was the boss of them. The question could be, was he seeing what was going to be, or was he creating in thought what was going to be? Creating in thought. Cool phrase, right? I like creating in sound, too. When we speak a demand, or a command, or a suggestion, or even a question, we are creating. Our self-talk is the voice of our competing internal impulses. We say, at least to ourselves, what we are going to do and not do. We listen to and are influenced by the power of our past energy exchange experiences. Trauma can make us hypervigilant or preemptively aggressive. It can also make us tentative and weak, and maybe vacillate between these two major types of behaviors. If we were to document our self-talk, we would be able to assign the monologues to our various personas, impulses, occupying different spaces on the 10 emotional states scale. We would find evidence of shame in our languaging and the replay of events in which we were directly shamed or we concluded that we were shameful. The same thing would result from observing apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, and hopefully courageousness, acceptance, and peace. It wouldn't surprise me to discover a single dominant emotional energy connected to a single damaging energy exchange experience that ended in us being split. If I'm correct, that would mean splits emotionally could look like a bifurcation between any expected emotional state and the emotion that occurred as a result of that interaction. Maybe the examples could be pride is going to result in shame. Pride comes before the fall, and maybe that fall is so dramatic that we think of it as shame and a deep defect in us. Anger might result in grief. We do something in anger and then like, oops, I just destroyed something I shouldn't have destroyed, and we experience a sense of loss. Maybe we could go on with the other emotional states and notice that similar result that could occur. Healing would seem to follow our willingness to hear and respect the voice of that split, the details of the energy exchange experiences, the processing of that experience, and the consideration by that energy of alternative meanings. It doesn't have to mean shame when we did something. By and large, a lot of the things that we did that didn't produce a desirable result is a function of insufficient awareness, which is a much more charitable and compassionate way to look at things. Can we allow ourselves to hear parts of ourselves, or is this an imagined distraction? For people with understanding and familiarity with inner child or inner parent work, this is not such a far-out concept. For people who see themselves as a single entity in this one moment in time, we'll find that idea of talking to parts of themselves confusing, off-putting, maybe even ridiculous. Rejection is splitting. It pushes parts further away. Healing splits requires the opposite of rejection. It requires bonding. If we stopped hating ourselves for our mistakes, for being afraid, for not knowing what to do or how to act, we would naturally heal. Because we know that we can change our minds, change our viewpoints about what happened, and about what those events mean, we can facilitate healing by directly engaging with the splits. To reiterate, these splits could be mediated into win-win resolutions. As our splits are healed, our actions will become more productive. Like a properly pruned fruit tree, our fruits, our output, our actions that are productive will be better, bigger, stronger, because they would have received sufficient attention energy driven by clear and unambiguous will and purpose. If we were to consider growth as natural, nutrition, nurturing, and nourishment as natural, healing and repair as natural, being protected and being protective as natural, having our needs fulfilled and fulfilling the needs of others as natural, doing and providing work as natural, fostering survival as natural, accepting rhythm as natural, and being governed by the law of cause and effect as natural, it follows that splits occur when the natural is violated in our perceptions. That makes healing our perceptions the second step in mastering our competing internal impulses, right after first identifying the splits. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.